Great. Welcome, everybody. This is the Senate Healthcare Committee, and it is June 1st. All right.
June, what are we still doing here?
I know. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2838. And Oliver, just let them know what's happened.
Good. Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you once again, it's House Bill 2838A. The bill received a work session on May 30th. So we've had a couple amendments come in. There's A5, A6, which was discussed by the committee on Tuesday, and now we have the -A8 amendment. Let me walk through that. The A8 amendment allows CCOs to provide application assistance to the extent permitted by federal law to the members who are seeking to renew OHP. It would require CCOs to provide unbiased information to potential enrollee in terms of selecting a CCO. It also prohibits display of marketing materials, requires OHA to provide on-site monitoring for compliance, and requires OHA to provide individual CCOs with access to state databases as well as training to employees of CCOs who are responsible for updating member information in the state databases. And it expands the types of organizations that would be eligible to receive grant funding through this bill. There is a fiscal on the A6, which is the A8 with the one exception of the expansion, and that's on OLIS.
And it is not a finished product, we know, because we still need to have a lot of input from OHA, too, which we have not had. All right. So.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -A8 amendments dated 6/1/17.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the A8 amendments dated 6/1/17 into House Bill 2838A. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
And then Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 2838A without fiscal and revenue statements.
Senator Cruz moves to suspend the rules so that we can send House Bill 2838A to Ways and Means without...
That wasn't my motion.
I know, without the fiscal or revenue. It's sort of how what you said.
Yeah, I know.
Any discussion? Any opposition? It's granted.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2838A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be added.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2838A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Just briefly, as much as we seem to try to avoid it, and I'm probably referring more to bills coming from the House to Ways and Means than in the Senate, there seems to be a hell of a lot of policy goes on in Ways and Means, and that is a total violation of the way we're supposed to do business.
No.
Having said that, I'll support the motion.
I will, Madam Chair.
Please.
I appreciate the Senator's concerns. I would point out, however, that when bills from the House come to Ways and Means, it's the only time the Senate gets to see them, and you should be happy that we work on them sometimes. No offense meant to our House colleagues. So,
Madam Chair, I would agree if they go to Ways and Means and are never seen, then that's a good thing.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2838A. Now, there's nothing else that we need to do with that, correct?
Correct, Chair.
Okay. Now, I'm going to open an informational hearing on eligibility and enrollment in the Oregon Health Plan. Beth Ann Darby, John Collins, and Lynn Saxton.
Good afternoon, Chair, Co-Chair, members of the committee. We're pleased to be here with you today to talk about the final lap of Medicaid eligibility post-installation of the One Eligibility System in 2015 and 2016 in compliance with the Oracle litigation timeframe. So today we just want to report to you that we are on track. 90% of renewals are complete. 733,695 are enrolled in the One system, which is the eligibility system we stood up at the end of 2015. And we have about 10%, these are May 1st numbers I'm giving you. There will be updates on these numbers continuously till completion. And then we have this 10% cleanup population as we anticipated. It's 115,236 individuals. Those cases are already in the spring forecast, which is available for your review. And Dr. Collins is here today and can talk to you further about the spring forecast. And then we're going to touch on the action plan that is in place and implemented to finish the cross the finish line by August 31st. I want to share with you first some key facts about the Oregon Health Plan. As you know, 95% of people in Oregon currently have access to health care coverage. 98% of children have access to health care coverage. This reflects the number of Oregonians enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan by counties. This is one of our most requested data presentations because I think initially people were surprised to see it. Our enrollment currently is that we serve more than a million Oregonians, one in four state residents. 90% of OHP members are enrolled in a CCO, and we have a focused effort underway to get as many people as legally possible out of fee-for-service status into the CCOs. The Medicaid reforms Oregon has initiated have saved the state and federal taxpayers $1.3 billion since 2013. I would highlight that 4 in 10 adults under the age of 65 that are currently enrolled in Medicaid are employed. And the expansion of Medicaid in Oregon, which was roughly double what was anticipated at startup, has generated $2.75 billion in federal funds for the state. Medicaid is and has been a federal-state partnership, and this is a good graphic for reference in terms of what we commonly characterize as the traditional Medicaid population, which has a 36% state share of funding and 64% federal share, and then what is known as the expansion population post the Affordable Care Act. This is a reflects the 94% federal share. As many of you know, this participation rate started at 100% and drops down over time, 6% state share. Our principal investor and funder for the eligibility system is the federal government. They pay more than 90% of the cost. We have consistently been in communication with CMS since startup of the work on our eligibility renewal plans, and we are happy to share with you a document reflecting those many conversations, which are continuing every week. We have shared decision-making for policy and operations. There are federal criteria that Oregon must meet in its eligibility system, and part of what we work very intensely with CMS to do is to ensure that we can bring the advantages of the Oregon model into the federal decision-making process. Oregon, as you know, has been engaged in transforming healthcare since 1994, and we have some structural advantages that CMS is very interested in terms of future economies. We have regular communication, I mentioned that, and we have quarterly financial reports to CMS, which are, they're called our projected expenditures and our actual expenditures. Those reports are filed quarterly, our public information, they're about 700 pages long. They're quite detailed. We wanted to show you the current state as of May 1st. It's today's June 1st, so these numbers have all changed and will continue to change. It's probably important to underscore for your consideration today that the numbers are changing in the right direction. But in any event, there are 1,028,059 participants in the Oregon Health Plan. 179,578 are the DHS programs, which include child welfare and aging people with disabilities. Another 848,931 are in our portfolio, and you'll see in the yellow star those that are already through the process. The remaining 115,000 have a variety of issues, and again, these numbers will be updated this month and brought back to everyone for review. We're past these numbers now, but These are the cases that we have consistently identified. At the end of the implementation of one, we would need to go back and do the heavy lift of sorting them out and getting them corrected and adjusted. Effectively, if you imagine a large workflow, you're going to with a new software system, you're going to get the cases that will go through readily through first, and then you're going to sort and address cases as needed to get the more complex cases resolved, and that's the stage of the process we're in. Basically, there are five broad categories of these cleanup cases. The first would be those who are excluded due to protected eligibility under Medicaid. Non-responders who are connected to an eligible case. This is the complex Sense Cover Oregon of sorting out families, family members, and what relationships are and who's eligible. Presumptive eligibility, which is for those specialized programs you're familiar with, which is the breast and cervical cancer program, extended medical and hospital presumption. Those who are eligible but stuck in the, it's kind of a, we've said the same thing twice, old legacy system, they both mean the same thing. Part of the complexity of Oregon's system in implementing one is that it's built, to build the one platform, it's built on top of existing legacy systems. I think there are five of them, and that transition is complex and challenging, and part of the reason why legacy systems, you know, need to be on a track for replacement. And finally, application was started in one but not finished. Many of you will recall that when one was stood up in the end of December 2015, that it had a number of component builds that were required for it to be fully functional. But in order to meet the Oracle litigation timeline, we had to get a very disciplined and focused number of those builds done to start, which we've done. We have approximately four, maybe we're down to 3.75 builds left, but there is more work to do till the system gets to the level that we all are looking for. We've had a lot of interest in who are the Medicaid eligibility cleanup cases. This is their profile. I'm not going to read this to you, but I would direct your attention to a couple key elements. First of all, the fact that 42% of this population is children, which means there's a high likelihood of eligibility. Secondly, 58%, this was a surprising number to us post-analysis, 58% of these people are non-ACA, which means that they are, again, likely based on traditional Medicaid criteria to be eligible. All of the people in the cleanup cases were eligible for Medicaid at one point. This is a breakdown of where these people in this group live, and our projection of if this population trends based on historic trends, 25% would be ineligible, 75% would be eligible, and we can talk about that more, but we don't expect to come in exactly on those numbers. That is just if you used our trend line to date. Do you want to talk about the enrollment and forecast?
Sure. For the record, my name is John Collins. I'm the Director of Health Analytics for OHA. This particular slide depicts what our current forecast is. It was produced in the spring of 2017. And basically what it's showing, and just to emphasize, it does incorporate the full set of people who are currently on Medicaid, including the individuals, the 115,000 individuals that Director Saxton was discussing. This just basically shows what's happened over the recent history and what we're projecting for our full caseload on Medicaid on the Oregon Health Plan. The real inflection point here, and I think to understand is that roughly in the beginning of 2016, that's when the true renewal process started under the one system, and we've had a decrease in our overall caseload pretty much since then as people have been processed, and we're working towards basically getting more towards a stabilized operative system with our eligibility system.
A question there. So their enrollment is really going down, but the numbers are of how many we have in the system are we talking about the same thing here?
Madam Chair, the numbers
are actually going down also.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it is due to?
It's Madam Chair, it's due to a number of reasons, but for a long time throughout 2015, we were basically on a waiver to hold our processes around enrollment with CMS. And once we actually started initiating that over the course of 2016 in the very beginning of this year, we have individuals who have since dropped off of Medicaid. In fact, we've had more people drop off Medicaid than add on to Medicaid, and that net change has created a decrease in our enrollment over that period of time.
Okay. So these people have insurance, or they just don't have insurance, those that have dropped off? Do we know that?
Chair, co-chair, we know that they may have moved to insurance with the improvement of the economy. We know that they may have relocated and moved. We know that there may be a number of reasons for those transitions. I think our best understanding of that is in the next 90 days for the 115,000. And particularly, I just want to remind the committee that our first completion of one annual renewal cycle with Medicaid, Medicaid is renewed annually, just ended. And so the ability to take that data and in its new improved form post one implementation, we have not looked at that composite data yet.
Okay. Senator Beyer?
So looking at your projection line here, I assume the gray line is a projection line. You will, from the peak in 16 to your projection in 19, we will have eliminated or lost off the caseload almost 200,000 people.
Madam Chair, Senator Byers, yes, that's correct.
That's a lot of people.
And will that affect our CCOs in the ability for them to exist? You know,
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, I believe that the CCOs particularly will be enthusiastic about stabilizing this variability and uncertainty. No business likes continued uncertainty or wild swings or corrective actions, and we've been having to do all of that since we stood up the system. Further, I would say that the agency is very focused on getting the fee-for-service population into the CCOs as much as possible, with the exception of the tribes. So I'm confident that the actions we're taking will improve the CCO's ability to sustain their work.
Great. Other questions?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Senator Byrne.
There's still the big why question. I mean, that's an incredible swing.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, it is in some respects, but let me give you a couple of leading indicators for why the swing. So first of all, there's the causal factor that Dr. Collins identified, which is we suspended redeterminations for a period of time and knew we would have to do that, because what we did with Cover Oregon is we had a lot of challenges with data quality, and what we committed to in 2016, which we're just now finishing up, was taking the year of 2016 and processing the data thoroughly and by hand to get a greater shot at accuracy. And so the swing is due to both that hiatus based on our technological challenges, but also based on the fact that we wanted to get it right. The other swing, which was anticipated and expected and people ask us about a lot, is the economy has improved during this time. CMS in our calls, what we trend ourselves to is other trends for unemployment rates, et cetera, in other states, and what should be happening with the Medicaid population as the economy improves.
And Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, and along those lines, this caseload is made up of a number of different populations within Medicaid, including those that would traditionally qualify through disability or old age, plus the expansion, which is mainly based off of the people's economic situation. And yes, there's been definite improvement over the years with that, so it would make sense for that part of the caseload to decrease. You see similar results in the DHS caseload if you're looking at SNAP or TANF populations. Those have also been decreasing.
So are you assuming that those 200 people...
200,000.
200,000, excuse me. 200,000 people are... They've moved off because their incomes have increased, but they are still insured? are we increasing the uninsured population?
No.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, I'm not going to make assumptions until we've had a chance to analyze the data. We're just finishing up the completion of a cycle, and our effort has been in getting it right as fast as possible. So we will be happy to have those conversations with you, but I'm not prepared to make assumptions today. Dr. Collins, I don't know if you are.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, Senator Beyer, I will just add that we are in the process of implementing another Oregon Health Insurance Survey, which will track how many people are currently uninsured, and we'll be able to take, once we have those results in, which is due fall or early winter, we'll be able to make an assessment of where we stand compared to the past time.
So in our informational, maybe in December,
yeah,
that would be a good time to have another update.
I will double check on the timeline.
If not, we'll have it in
December
later.
Would be great. We'll have something to say.
Okay. Yes, Senator Steiner Hayward.
I was just going to say, I mean, I just want to reiterate everything that our panelists have said. I think anecdotally, let me be crystal clear, anecdotally, we are not hearing about a significant increase in the uninsured rate. We're not hearing that from our hospitals about having people show up without insurance. We're not hearing it from physician providers. If you think about the spike that happened in the beginning of 2014, that was even before the implementation of the small business mandate, too, that was part of the Affordable Care Act. So there are a lot of people who even then were economically eligible and were working for businesses that weren't offering insurance at an affordable rate. All this being said, you will remember from a bill that I presented to this committee some time ago, we still know that there's something on the order of 60,000 people at least who are on OHP who are working full-time for a company with more than 50 employees. So there are a lot of complicating factors to this, Senator, but I think it's what you're seeing with the drop is primarily improving economic circumstances.
Okay.
And the small business mandate that offers people another option for insurance through their employer.
Okay.
It's my best gut.
Thank you. One of the things we wanted to do and had said, I believe it was last week, that we would be reporting out is we're now preparing, as we complete these cases over the next 90 days, we now have the analysis of what the complexity of that work is, which was part of the challenge for our team to kind of tackle it and deploy the right people doing the right tasks, which is, first of all, they're very excited about doing that, and second of all, it's great to get to this point. This is kind of a sample of the programming needs that we have to resolve the renewal eligibility issues between old legacy systems and the one system. I encourage you to, I'm not going to again read those aloud to you, but those are some of the elements of the challenge. I think the team that we have working on this work includes KPMG, which has been our partner throughout startup, Deloitte, PH Tech, Chavs, Galt, and then, of course, our own workforce. So there's a team of people working on this, and we will be completed by August 31st as planned.
And I know the bill that we just passed out had to do with renewal of CCO, those that are already in the existing CCOs, and maybe this is an unfair question since I didn't let you know I'd ask it ahead of time, but do you think that we will ever get to a point where CCOs would be able to renew their own people?
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz. That's been an active discussion in our shop for 2 years. I know the CCOs are interested in doing that. CMS has some standards, required standards for that we have to work with, but we're certainly interested in having that discussion. I think the question is, and of course, as we all know, federal policy is a work in progress as well. So what we all know is that the goal was to have the consumer have the ability to make choices and to not have to have as few of those choices made for them. So we're looking forward to working with the CCOs on that and with CMS as well. This is the action plan. And it shows kind of what steps happen along the way and what gets done. Again, our deadline is August 31st. And this is a tiered effort. I don't know if many of you have had the opportunity to be at the call center. We would welcome you to join us there to see the work in progress. It's not quite sorting things into stacks of papers, but that's the best kind of example I can give of how we have to do this work. And that is done with a high level of sophistication in terms of that sort, so that we are able to go as fast as possible. So there's a team of people working on one aspect of the problem. There's another team working on another aspect. There are contractors working with exportable parts of the process, and this is how it steps out in terms of completion.
And with that, we have a healthy appendix at the back, Beth Ann Darby, Oregon Health Authority. We have a healthy appendix at the back that we are happy to walk you through, or is there if you have additional questions about other aspects, but we're happy to answer questions.
How are we doing, committee?
Oh, I think we're done.
Okay.
I will just say, Madam Chair, that this is something that these folks have been presenting to those of us in Ways and Means for some time. We've had separate meetings. My co-chair and I have had separate meetings. We had a presentation in committee last Tuesday, so they're being very forthcoming with their plans and their process.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us, because, you know, sometimes those of us who aren't on Ways and Means and yet we're dealing with policy, I think it's extremely important for us to have this information. So thank you very much, team. That'll close the informational. This is our last meeting. I would like to adjourn soon, but I want you to all open your little bags. And we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Who did these? These are great. Who did these? These are great. Who did these?